Good morning. Good morning and welcome on this glorious morning. No snow blocking our way. It's great to be here on this in all this sunshine. We are the West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, affectionately known as WUF, and this is our Sunday morning worship service. Again, good morning, and especially good morning and welcome. When I look out and I see almost 100% of our people in our seats are wearing masks, I am grateful because this is one of the things that we do as beloved community. We support each other, those who have more health care needs and are more fragile. We may not need to wear a mask, but we would do it for others. So thank you for that. Now, Howard gave us a little update about our generosity, and we're going to talk a little later more about giving and gratitude and the part that it plays in this vibrant and beloved community that we build here together and affectionately call WUF. But right now, we want to welcome you to our up-close and personal celebration of International Transgender Visibility Day, where this morning we are recognizing and honoring, celebrating actually, only some of the pioneers, not only some of the pioneers who led the movement, but all the ordinary folks in between. Some of you remember this. It's been 63 years since Christine Jorgensen became the first American to experience gender reassignment surgery. That was in 1950. 7 years since the cover of Vogue magazine featured the stunning photograph of former tennis star Caitlyn Jenner. And in between and since, there have been hundreds of thousands of brave individuals who chose to be who they were meant to be. Yesterday, here at WUF, there was a well-attended, lively, and spirited pride potluck with people from several congregations, not just ours. And this morning, here we are, together, again. My name is Salima Mawson. I use the pronouns she and her. And it is my joy and my privilege to welcome you all, whether you're here in the sanctuary, downstairs in the coffee room, watching the service on our screen, or at home watching online. Whether you are alone or with family and friends, if you're with us for the first time, or the 50th, or the 500th, whatever your appearance, your abilities, whatever your age or where you're from, your spiritual practices, if you have any, or your gender identity, know that you are welcome here. You are so welcome here. And we invite you to join us after service for coffee and conversation, whether you're here in the building or online. So check your order of service, and if you are online, there'll be a place for you to click on to that. So let's get started. Let's get started this morning by standing together as we may be able or willing, and join together in singing hymn number 354 in your gray hymnal, We Laugh, We Cry. Our song leader today is Scott Winters, and Betsy's going to just give us a little intro here. And we're singing verse 1, 3, and 4?
Yes, 1, 2, and 4 in your gray hymnal. 1, 2, and 4.
We laugh, we cry, we live, we die, we dance, we sing our song. We need to feel there's something into which we can belong. We need to feel the freedom just to have some time alone. But most of all, we need close friends, very own. And we believe in life and in the strength of love. And we have found a need to be together. We have our hearts to give. We have our thoughts to receive. And we believe that sharing is an answer. A child is born among us and we feel a special joy. We see time's endless journey as we watch the baby grow. We thrill to hear imagination freely running wild. We dedicate our minds and hearts to the spirit of this child. And we believe in life and in the strength of love. And we have found a time to be together. And with our hearts to give, we have our thoughts to receive. And we believe that sharing is an answer. We seek elusive answers to the questions of this life. We seek to put an end to all the ways of human strife. We search for truth, equality, and blessed peace of mind. And then we come together here to make sense of what we find. We believe in life and in the strength of love. And we have found a need to be together. And with our hearts to give, we have our thoughts to receive, and we believe that sharing is an answer.
And we begin our time of sharing, beloved community, this morning. Liz Hart and their son Ursa will light our chalice. And we, as a congregation, will do this responsive reading. Your lines are underlined. We light this flame in love, the doctrine of our faith.
The quest for truth is our sacrament, and service is our prayer.
To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge in freedom.
To serve human needs so that all shall grow in harmony with the divine.
We light this flame to covenant with each other and the spirit of life. And now, if all the children in the sanctuary this morning will come to the front row, we have it reserved especially for you. Ursa's Momo is going to share with us the story of Julian. Side note here, in some states, Julian is a mermaid is being banned.
Julian is a Mermaid by Jessica Love. This is a boy named Julian, and this is his abuela, and those are some mermaids. Julian loves mermaids. Vamanos, mijo. This is our stop. Abuelo, did you see the mermaids? I saw them, mijo. Abuela, I am also a mermaid. I'm going to take a bath. You be good. Julian has a good idea. Oh. Uh-oh. Come here, mijo. For me, abuela? For you, Julian. Where are we going? You'll see. Mermaids, whispers Julian. Like you, mijo. Let's join them. And they do. It's interesting that Julian is a Mermaid is a banned book because the words are never said. It's just the pictures and the representation. So if you want to stand now and we'll form arches and sing the children out to their classroom.
Those are our children, our future. The future where everything and anything is possible for them. When I was acknowledging some of the history that preceded Transgender Visibility Day, I neglected to have put up on the screen Portland's own beloved Darcel, who died this week at age 92, the great iconic figure that we all dearly love. I think we need to give him a standing ovation, don't you? We have so much to be grateful for, not only as the community of faith that we are, the beloved community that we are becoming, but being here in this place, in a state that is governed by a lesbian, where books so far are not banned, in our libraries and our schools, and where we can come forward and be exactly who we are. We are grateful for the generosity of spirit that we share as Howard said, we have financial needs, and we meet those as best we can. But it is the love that comes with volunteering here that really makes us who we are. So whether you're helping with coffee hour, whether you're working on beautifying the grounds, whatever it is that you have to offer, those are the gifts that we receive so gratefully, no matter what they are. So consider now, as we offer up our physical offerings this morning, consider what it is that you have to give and what it is that you're grateful for. And if you'd like, you're invited to speak out the words, what it is that you're grateful for. It's gratitude and giving. It's kind of an infinity loop. We don't usually have one without the other. And so, thank you, Christine. So, as we gratefully receive your offerings this morning, let us speak together our affirmation of gratitude and giving. Let us be grateful when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we may learn from the generosity of others. And now, again, Liz Hart, will you come up and offer words to today's call to worship?
Today's call to worship words are from beloved non-binary and queer icon Andrea Gibson. For every queer school kid who has had to take martial arts lessons to survive recess, for every drag queen at Stonewall forced to fight for her life with the daggers of her stilettos, for every woman right now ripping off the Bible's belt and taking it to the patriarchy's ass, for everyone working to take our power all the way back to the first glacier that had to learn how to swim, and for those who have never known protest to be a holy hymn, who think it's an exaggeration to use the word fascism when describing what is ruling this nation, when the earth is being beaten, muzzled, tied to the coal slinging tracks, outrage is a flower grown from the seed of love. Sometimes love must be ready. Its heart's teeth tear its incisors through the leash of hate to reach peace. During a time when lies are invading the land of truth, let us know hope is just an idea if it doesn't lace up its boots.
Remember that hope is just an idea if it doesn't lace up its boots. Betsy, you want to... So we all come this morning to be together and to share what is in our heart. Not necessarily with words, but with caring, with contemplation. And the way that we do that here on Sunday morning, if you are so moved and have something on your heart that you want to share, we invite you to come forward, place it, whatever it is, a joy, a sorrow, a celebration, a pain, a hurt. Whatever it is, place it in a stone. And then in the water of the bowl here on the table that represents our community. Let us hold that feeling. Let us hold that joy, that sorrow, whatever it is. Let us hold that with you. Let us sing together from the Heal hymnal. How could anyone ever tell you?
How could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul. How could anyone ever tell you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul.
It isn't that you don't like boys. It's that you only like boys you want to be. David, with his jaw carved out of the side of a cliff. Malcolm, who doesn't have secrets, just stories he owes no one. Chris, the basketball hero with a tick, blinks 15 times when he makes a shot. You spend hours blinking in the mirror, pretending you're a star like him. Mary Levine calls you a dyke, and you don't have the language to tell her she's wrong and right. So you just show up to her house, promising to paint your fingernails red with what will gush from her busted face if she ever says it again. You're in the 7th grade. You don't even know you want a girlfriend. You still believe too much in the people who believe in Jesus to even feel that desire through its health threat. You just want to kick your desk on the way to the principal's office, slouch in detention, want to cut your hair and spit out whatever you don't want in your mouth, your own name even, skirting around the truth. You don't yet know the boys are building their confidence on stolen land, but you do worry the girls might be occupied with things you will never understand, won't ever, ever be good at. You take one pretty step and feel like you're pouring bubbles into your own blood bath. You don't want a soft death. You want a hard life. That is your life. your life in the locker room that doesn't stop demanding you keep your eyes on the floor. Your life at the prom where you run home in a snowstorm, chucking your last pair of heels in a snowbank, realizing you are the only boy you ever wanted to tear your dress off for. Your life, the first Christmas you spend alone, the years you learn to build your family out of scratch. Your life when someone drags you from a restroom by the color of your coat. Your life every time airport security screams pink or blue, trying to figure out what machine setting to run you through. Choosing your life and how that made you into someone who now often finds it easy to explain your gender by saying you are happiest on the road when you're not here or there, but in between, that yellow line running down the center of it all like a goddamn sunbeam. Your name is not a song you will sing under your breath. Your pronouns haven't even been invented yet. You're gonna shave your head and drive through Texas. You're gonna kill your own God so you can fall in love for the first time. They're gonna keep telling you your heartbeat is a pre-existing condition. They're gonna keep telling you you are a crime of nature, and you're gonna look at all your options and choose conviction. Choose to carve your own heart out of the side of a cliff. Choose to spend your whole life telling secrets you owe no one to everyone, till there isn't anyone who can insult you by calling you what you are. You holy blinking star, you highway streak of light, falling over and over for your hard life, your perfect life, your sweet and beautiful life.
Liz.
I got Paul angry again. It's fine.
Because I don't follow anyone. It's fine, because this is a poem I wrote about my life. In a similar context to the poem that Andrew Gibson just recited. This poem is called If You Think You Don't Know a Trans Person, You Do. It's written in rhyming couplets, so it's a little Dr. Seussy. That's how I like to deliver hard-hitting messages. I gotta turn it on. Born to two teens at the height of the AIDS crisis in rural Oregon, my parents surprised us and named me after both of my grandmothers, middle name of one and same of the other, Susan Elizabeth and Linda Marie. Elizabeth Marie is what they named me. One of my very first memories as a kid is playing house with the boys, and we did take on roles, but mine was always changing, dialogue and titles always exchanging. At 4 years old, I kissed the neighbor girls right on the mouth, my hands in their curls. We hid under blankets and behind doors, sensory seeking and looking for more. Then once, when I was 5 years old, I remember being on the toilet and saying aloud, I wish I had a penis so I could stand to pee, because sitting down felt inconvenient to me. As I got older, I was labeled a tomboy. Ripped jeans and dirty hands are what brought me joy. I wore pink clothes, and I had long hair with bows, and still was misgendered wherever I'd go. Unfortunately for me, puberty came early on. I slouched in my chair with big T-shirts on to hide the big lumps riding my chest. I cut my hair short. I never wore dresses, and I knew I was gay from an early age. I had crushes on girls with whom I'd engage in kissing at sleepovers and secret at night. Maybe it was wrong, but man, it felt right. And once when a substitute teacher came to my school, she leaned over me at the table and I basically drooled. And sometimes there was a boy who might make my head turn, but later they all turned out to be gay, I would learn.
In middle school, I heard one of my friends say that kissing me didn't actually make any of them gay, because to them, I wasn't really a real kind of girl, and the concept of trans didn't exist in our world. As a teenager, I was outwardly queer in high school. I had visible girlfriends, and we kissed in the halls. My peers voted me on to the senior prom court. Me wearing a dress was novel to them. And I can report that makeup and heels felt foreign to me. It was like being in drag, even though the performed gender was supposed to be me. This led to an early adulthood rebellion. Older queers looked at me as if I was a hellion. I met other weirdos and punks and the like. I identified as a faggot and a gender-fucked dyke. I changed my name to Turtle. I got piercings and a tattoo. I wanted to be visibly queer, and everyone else wanted that too. When I turned 22, my boyfriend at the time did something I hadn't considered was fine. He began to transition from female to a guy. He cut off his tits, gave testosterone a try. Suddenly, I felt like I was surrounded by trans folks. Everyone around me thought gender was a joke. I grew out my facial hair. It rivaled my peers. People asked if I had transitioned, and to them I would jeer. Pronouns and labels didn't interest me at all. I was just me. I was having a ball. A few years later, a new girlfriend and I gave ourselves boy names and thought we would try being boyfriends instead. We thought it was funny, but I wasn't trans. One thing, I didn't have the money to really transition, even if I wanted to, but I also didn't want to be perceived as a dude. Right around this time came the new term non-binary, and in gender terms it felt like linguistic finery, but I misunderstood the definition of the word, so I didn't identify with that or pronoun transition, but I still went by Jake for almost 6 years. I didn't tell my family, trying to avoid their tears. It was like kind of having a double life. And in some ways, it made it easier on myself to avoid strife, because at 28, I moved out of Portland. I could just use my birth name as I had planned. I could be perceived as just gay instead of transgender and avoid all the gay bashing from bigoted offenders. But I still didn't know really that I wasn't a girl. The language I needed just didn't exist in my world, and when I moved back home, I had to start over from scratch. Get new friends, a new job, and here was the catch. I just kept going by Liz and being perceived as a gay woman, which wasn't entirely untrue. I kind of felt like that kind of human. The next 10 years of my life, I experienced drama. I had multiple abusive relationships. I piled on trauma. In my marriage, the goal began to just be about survival. I couldn't focus on some kind of gender revival. There were many times I was criticized and put in a box. My gender felt mocked. The dynamic was toxic. I didn't have an identity crisis so much as an identity shortage. I was tangled up in raising kids, having a mortgage. My body began to feel foreign to me. I hated how fat I got. I hated anything to do with sexuality. I felt tokenized in my relationship. My mental health suffered. My mind felt like it was going to slip. I spent 4 years on a couch in the living room, focusing on anything I could besides the elephant in the room, and everyone outside of that house where I suffered might look like I blew up my life, like I was callous or cold, but the truth is exactly a year to this day, I started living my very own kind of way. I stopped engaging in the cycles of abuse. I stopped using everything I could to find an excuse. I stopped trying to live up to others' idea of me. I stopped living a life that felt horrific to me. I met other queer people and non-cis adults. I fell in love a few times, and as a result, I felt affirmed and secure in my identity. I felt free to explore what makes up me. And in December, I got fucking top surgery, something I'd wanted since the age of 14. And I learned the real meaning of what it is to be non-binary, even though I still kind of identify as a genderqueer dyke, mostly. It took a long time to understand that trans just meant not cis, that I didn't necessarily have to go by him, his. And maybe it will, and maybe I will, I still haven't decided. I feel like I don't have all the information provided. And in January, much to my own surprise, I got a prescription to my hormonal demise. I started testosterone shots once a week, and it's changing my voice. It's putting acne on my cheeks. Second puberty, as I'm nearing 40, is almost stupid, but it's helping me feel all the more gender fluid. For me, it's just an alteration to my body I call home, just like the tattoos or my clothes or where I come from. What I've realized is that if I want people to know me, I have to be visible outside, not just what's hiding inside me. And right now that might look like the burned phoenix in ash or the caterpillar in a cocoon, goo or the lightning flash right before you hear the bottom of the, you hear the boom of the thunder. I'm in the middle of becoming, in the crux of surrender. But soon I'll rise up from the destructible fire. I'll sprout wings and float around for everyone to admire. Or maybe I won't. Maybe I'll stay in mid-transition and find some other livable situation. Right now I'm just learning that I can be vulnerable and weird. I can be silly and flawed. I don't have to be disappeared. Instead, I can be seen. I can be known. And as long as I'm loved, I'm never alone.
Thank you. Big thank you. And now another iconic champion, Holly Near.
We are a gentle, angry people, and we are singing for our lives. We are a peaceful, loving people, and we are singing for our lives. We are a peaceful, loving people, and we are
say, as you all travel back to your communities, to just take a moment right now to take the sound of this room into your heart, the look of your comrades, something that you learned, some emotion that you had, and when it gets discouraging and seems absolutely impossible, bring back this moment right here, where you know that there were thousands and thousands of people who have worked with you over a lifetime to try to find what it means to be a peaceful person, what it means to be a person who works for justice, what it means to be someone who holds the weight of the horror and at the same time holds the weight of the spectacular beauty of what goes on this planet. And it is our job as conscientious people to be able to hold both parts and move forward with grace and dignity and courage, and you are a great example of that.
We are a peaceful, loving people, and we are singing for our lives. We are a peaceful, loving people, and we are singing.
If you will come up and extinguish our chalice, we will put out the flame of the chalice, but not the love, not the compassion, the caring. All that we are in this place this morning, let us carry it with us as we go out and begin our week. Thank you all for being here. Join us for coffee conversation downstairs.